Napa know-how.
Napa guy knows not to judge a man by his car's multicolored paint job or absence of modern gadgetry. Who cares if it's technically old enough to vote and the windows are powered by the strength of your left arm? Your monthly payment is zero, and it'll stay that way. Because with over 500,000 parts and a little Napa know-how, you can keep anything on the road. She may not be pretty, but she's all yours. That's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how.
Have you heard any feedback or had any interaction with Tim over these past couple of games?
With who?
Tim.
Oh, sure. Yeah, we're like in love. We text all the time.
Do you use emojis? Huh? Do you use emojis when you text?
Only the ones where you blow kisses.
As made evident by having you on my show, I'm a fan of what you're doing over at Locked On Spurs. That's as good a place to start as anything. Hey, Almighty Ballin listeners, I'm here today. We're not going to talk about it, Jeff. I swear, we can't do it. I'm going to cry. I'm not saying that I support one candidate or the other, but it's too real for me. So instead, we're talking about, in my opinion, the greatest attraction on earth, sports. And then
indeed,
specifically the greatest sport on earth, basketball. And I'm here with Jeff Garcia of Locked On Spurs. And, give us a little dossier, like your career highlights, Jeff.
Not a problem. And by the way, thanks for having me on the show. Really appreciate it. I'm currently the News 4 San Antonio, Fox 29 San Antonio, the Fox and obviously the NBC affiliate, Spurs main lead writer. Some of my past experiences, well, I used to host a ESPN San Antonio radio show Sunday mornings, all things Texas sports. I had my own Spurs TV show on News 4 San Antonio, and I actually helped co-found ProjectSpurs.com. So needless to say, I've done a lot surrounding the NBA, in particular the San Antonio Spurs, from the NBA draft to the NBA finals to NBA All-Star Game, Vegas, Team USA, you name it, I probably pretty much covered it. Is what I bleed, silver and black, and I love following pretty much the team that is just copied among the lead.
Well, attempted to be copied, at least, you know.
Yeah.
I hear the comparison between them and the Patriots a lot, and I don't really watch football, but it seems like, from what I can tell, a pretty good comparison. The Spurs just do everything right. Well, so as a Spurs insider, what were your expectations going into the season? Because I was really surprised about the level of skepticism that surrounded the team. And I talked about on a season preview panel for Blog Talk Radio how the only thing I could foresee being damaging is a cultural loss because of Tim Duncan. But
right,
even that, I was skeptical about how serious that was. So go ahead and start with Tim Duncan. Do you think that there's any truth to that? Do you think that the Spurs aren't quite as Spursy as they were before?
You're losing a cornerstone like Tim Duncan does suck the life out of the Spurs. I mean, Popovich was in tears. You fast forward to today, Duncan is still around the team, and Pop is just loving it. So yeah, the Spurs lost a lot, but are they still Spursy? I think so. Now, Pop is still there. Manu is still there. Parker is still there. And other mainstays during that trail end of Duncan's time, like Danny Green, and even Kawhi Leonard, the element is still there. The corporate knowledge is still there. But right now, they're in a transition phase. They started their youth movement. They brought it in. They brought some draft picks that they had stashed overseas. They got a little younger, case in point, Dwayne Dedman. Kawhi Leonard is just somersaulting into stardom right now, and as hard as that can believe after his first few 5 years in the league. league. But this team right now, you know, you kind of asked me a little earlier about expectations. My expectations for this team was simply just get 50 wins or more. They're not going to get 67 like they did last season. They're going to have somewhat of some fumbling to begin with. And you're kind of seeing it right now. The LaMarcus Aldridge, Pau Gasol pairing is not really taking off as many thought it would. Danny Green's been out. Tony Parker got hurt early in the season. So here we are. The Spurs are still being Spurs, though. Despite all of that, they're 5-2. They're undefeated on the road. They're waffling a little bit at home, but you know, that's thank you, schedule makers, for that. And when I look at this team, I still see a playoff contending team, but I'm not ready to nail it down and say they are a title contending team.
Well, so let me tell you why I personally am not concerned about the Pau Gasol LaMarcus lineup, because I mean, first, I think that you would agree with me that offensively, it's been, if anything, a little bit of an improvement, at least in terms of front court, right? And there's been some instability in the back court because of Tony Parker and because Patty Mills being you know, implemented as the starter. But at least in terms of back court, offensively, it's been a good fit. And I think that one of the big things that people have missed the boat on, that there's going to be a collective realization that the next step in the Vogel experiment of having a free safety small forward is that I think what the Spurs did with their defense last year was revolutionary, insofar as Danny Green would basically pin down the biggest threat, who was a guard, and then Kawhi would lock down the biggest wing threat, who was ball dominant in some capacity, and then just sort of dissect the court down the middle and then, you know, direct everyone and just like refuse to let them spread to the corners. And whenever anyone wanted to attempt to drive, they would just funnel them through the middle, where Tim Duncan could contest really easily. It wasn't anything that required a whole lot of like front, back, or lateral movement, because Kawhi and Danny Green's understanding of space and defense was so perfect that the contest was right there on Tim Duncan's front doorstep. So, I mean, I think that Danny Green is, you know, understood to be like a dominant wing defender, but like, I think he's underrated. I think he might be like top five wing defender, and the Spurs defense, I don't think really works when you're playing Manu Ginobili. So I think once Danny Green comes back, you're going to see that same effect where anyone who's just trying to drive will be intentionally put in a place by Kawhi or Danny Green where Pau Gasol doesn't need to overextend to contest.
I agree with you 100%. You look at Danny's defensive evolution. It took, and offensively, it took a hit. And you're seeing, if you look at his past seasons heading into this season, the offensive numbers were beginning to drop. Not dramatically, but a point here, a point there, point and a half. But his defense spiked. Now, you can credit that to the fact that Kawhi Leonard has emerged. LaMarcus Aldridge came into the scene. So some shots going to be have to given up. And maybe they looked at Danny as that person. Like, look, you know, if you're open for a three, take it. But I see him more like, and I'm surprised nobody's really said this, but almost Bruce Bowen light. Lockdown player on defense. Hit that corner three. Hit that three-pointer when you can. Still be that viable threat on the wings. But his main goal now, and I think Danny has really focused on that, is defense. I spent an entire day with him at his basketball camp in New York. And let me tell you, he was raring to go prior to the injury, obviously. And it, defensively, we talked about it, and he said, yeah, that he's, that's been his main focus. And defense wins titles. Popovich preaches it. It's been proven in San Antonio. You're seeing it in 2014. You saw that beautiful game. Hopefully the Spurs can get back to that this season.
You mean beautiful game, like the ball movement?
The ball movement, yes, yes.
Yeah, yeah. No, it'll be really interesting to see what Popovich does in terms of that. I think that I really hope that right now is the time that we can start seeing that a little bit, just because I think Patty Mills opened things up a whole lot more. Pau Gasol is like a really sincerely legitimate threat from outside. And in the same way that Miles Turner spreads the floor without being really a three-point shooter, I think Pau Gasol is just someone you have to hug just 100% of the time, or he's just going to get a shot off. So I don't see any reason why the floor can't be really spread. And if the floor is spread, then the ball movement stuff should kick in. But I mean, I agreed with Popovich's decision to use the starters last year as more of a grinder, like putting people through sort of the rigors of like, just we're gonna try to grind you down to like a little nub, so that when you go on the offensive end, you're so exhausted from just having to go through this 24 seconds of brutal defense just to stop us from scoring. And they capitalized off of that, I think.
Well, the difference, though, is last season the Spurs had perhaps the best rim protector in the NBA. That was Tim Duncan. That's no longer there. You lost a lot. I mean, there were even other players such as David Robinson who felt that Duncan should have played one more year just simply because he's that effective on the floor defensively. He was the quarterback. He was the linebacker in the NFL. I'm sorry, the linebacker. He could read the defense. He would scream out, "Hey, Parker, a pick is coming. Hey, Kawhi, you know, don't worry about it. Send him to me. I'll funnel him to me." And you don't really see that from a Pau Gasol, at least early on, or not even LaMarcus Aldridge. That's the biggest concern I have heading into the new season. Ironically, though, the Spurs are still ranking up there when it comes to defense, thanks in large part to Kawhi Leonard.
Yeah, no, I think that, if anything, Pau Gasol, I mean, Pau Gasol has put up good block numbers in Chicago the last couple of years, but I mean, in a, you know, sort of how do people generally, what are, when people are within 6 feet of this person, like how likely are they to score? He hasn't been elite by any means, but I think that the type of rim protector that Pau Gasol is, which is more of like a positional defense rather than an athleticism or like a length-based defense, I think he fits. You know, I don't see any reason why he still won't average over 2 blocks a game this year. And I think that the mental thing is the crucial element. But to give Pau Gasol some credit, he's been a borderline elite defender earlier in his career.
Right. And you want to toss this in too. Now, the Spurs did address having some sort of rim protector by bringing in Deadman, and he has been effective early in the season. He has proven that he can be that shot blocking intimidator presence in the paint. He's rebounding, and occasionally he'll chip in 8 to 12 points a game, which is great. And there is kind of a cry among Spurs fans that want to see him inserted into the starting lineup, but then how do you tell a LaMarcus Aldridge or a Pau Gasol, you got to take a seat? If anybody can do it, it can't be Popovich. But he is an athletic big that has defense first. Pop loves that. So it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out if Pau continues to struggle, or maybe it's just a situational thing. I mean, I'm pretty sure Pau Gasol can handle it if he has to sit, but it'll be interesting to see if Pop does go down that road.
Well, so like I said, I think that once Danny Green returns, their defensive system by playing from the outside in, which was like a really interesting way of playing it. And I think, you know, I'm expecting that to start to be duplicated elsewhere. But I think once he returns, things are going to normalize. But if Tony Parker comes back and starts, then your defense at the point of attack is significantly flawed. And they just aren't playing the type of defense in that, you know, say the Celtics with KG used to play, where you can put LaMarcus Aldridge up at the top of, you know, the free throw line. And, you know, I mean, like, he just can't handle that. You know, he there's no Kevin Garnett on this team. I don't think Dwayne Dedman's even close to being there. No. And Tim Duncan could do that earlier in his career, but he's just not there. And I don't think anyone else is. So I feel like the Spurs are facing a crossroads with Tony Parker, where The absence of Tim Duncan doing some of the stuff like what you described earlier, calling out rotations, you know, keeping Tony Parker in the right place where at least with his decreased athleticism and his just generally poor defense for the most part, at least you had Tim Duncan, you know, sort of using him by proxy to be adequate.
He was like now, a safety blanket, like a safety blanket defensively,
Yeah, but now I don't think that's viable anymore, and I'm 100% on board with moving Patty Mills to the starting lineup. The interesting thing is Patty Mills has outspokenly said that he thinks that Tony Parker should start. What do you think?
Well, you know, if you want to go by numbers and just pure numbers, when Parker has been in the starting lineup, the Spurs are 3-0 with him. With Patty Mills in the starting lineup, they're 2-1. Now it's just a game, you know, you're going to fret over one game. Nonetheless, you know, Parker's still bring something on the floor. That's look, heading into this season, Chris, I tell you this much, and I was very vocal about it on Lockdown Spurs in my write-ups for News 4 San Antonio, Fox 29 San Antonio. A big concern I had was the point guard position. Parker, you're saying it right now, Chris, I'm agreeing with you, is on his last legs. Patty Mills had a phenomenal summer playing with Team Australia. But to insert him in the starting lineup and push Parker to the bench, you're going to lose something off that Spurs bench, that punch offensively. I like Mills still on the bench. You also add this too. Let's just say worst case scenario, Parker gets hurt for an extended amount of time or Mills goes down. After those two guys, there's a significant drop off in point guard reliability, NBA experience. You got a 20-year-old kid, DeJounte Murray, who still is very raw. You have Nicholas Lopez-Vitola, who has proven to be a little bit of a gem so far for San Antonio. He was a non-traditional rookie. He has a lot of pro experience playing overseas in the EuroLeague, the Spanish team, the Olympics. He has chemistry with Monta Ginobili. But there was going to be a significant drop-off. So I still kind of look at that position as the Spurs' biggest weakness. But do the Spurs still need a dominant point guard with the way Kawhi is playing and with the threat of LaMarcus Aldridge still there? Probably not.
Well, yeah. I mean, they run so much. Yeah. They run so much triangle. And it's not like a pure triangle, but at least in terms of like ball movement and sort of kicking in and kicking out. I mean, Patty Mills, you know, the most important thing you would want in that type of system that I think the Spurs are trying to play is someone who can knock down a three and someone who is a functional cog in an offense that's led mostly by the two bigs because they're both really good offensive threats. And then Kawhi Leonard, most of all, you know, like that's – I think that's what Popovich has been hyping him all along to be. I think he's sort of said from almost day one, like, Kawhi Leonard's better than you guys think, and he's going to run our offense and run our defense. And I think that that's what the destiny of the Spurs is supposed to be. So I think about that, and I think about the fact that, like, if you're going to be running a 4 and a 5 like LaMarcus Aldridge, Tony Parker just doesn't really make that much sense anyways. They're hardly elite in the pick and roll. And although LaMarcus Aldridge is like a great pick and pop candidate, I think that he is almost better used as like a double team threat by backing up his man. You know, I think that that's been his go-to. What's up?
Well, here's where Parker can actually still be effective. If he just goes in with the mindset of pass first, shoot second. If he starts becoming a bigger facilitator for the Spurs and gives up taking that off, at least on the offensive end, I'm sorry, then the Spurs machine offensively can work. But you're right. There's still that liability on defense because he's just like Swiss cheese. I mean, Chris Paul is just going to run wild on him. Stephen Curry is just going to abuse him unless obviously they switch off and put Danny or Kawhi on there. But still, there's still Klay Thompson to deal with. But, you know, you look at Parker, at least in this season, yeah, he hasn't really played much. He's only, played 4 games, started all 4 of them. So if he just becomes a facilitator, that's all I want out of him. Just pass that ball, set up guys, run the offense, give the ball up to Kawhi and LaMarcus and Powell. Let them run wild. Let them do what they can do best. Parker ranks right up there among one of the Spurs' better assist guys on the team. Hopefully he keeps that up once he comes back, hopefully against the Rockets.
So do you – oh, and yeah, that's the expectation. That's what's coming out of the Spurs, is that he's going to be back against the Rockets on Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess my concern there is – and I just finished recording earlier a Pacers podcast where there was sort of this consensus that the Pacers are making a real mistake by offensively not running everything through Paul George. Mm-hmm. If you have someone who's a significant threat like Kawhi Leonard or like Paul George on the offensive end, like, you should put the ball in his hands. And I just don't like the idea of Tony Parker being a facilitator in any significant way. I think that Patty Mills just makes so much more sense. And, you know, from a record perspective, I get what you're saying with Tony Parker starting, but the Spurs thus far are 50 points per 100 possessions better with Patty Mills starting.
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
Or at least playing alongside the starters.
But then you look at the bench, though. The Spurs bench is one of the better teams. The Spurs bench was outscoring opposing teams' bench by, and I'm exaggerating, by a billion points to start the season. They were always outperforming the opposing benches during their hot start to the season when they were undefeated. You insert Mills, you lose that punch. He's averaging right now close to 12 points per game. That's off the bench.
Well, do you think that's true? Because if anything, to me, a Tony Parker, Manu Ginobili bench, and then also part of that is that Dwayne Dedman in pick and rolls with Tony Parker could just be, like, really devastating. I think that the bench would be aided by having Tony Parker instead of Patty Mills.
Yeah. I mean, you also factor this in, too. But Parker wouldn't probably be going up against the better guards. They'll get their B-team guards out there, the bench guys. That can help him, too. And, of course, that familiarity with Manu Ginobili. And let's face it, sometimes Manu Ginobili does act as a de facto point guard at times when they need a ball handler. So I think they're fine. My just concern is just, again, losing that offensive punch. I like that offensive threat that Mills gives you off that bench. I just love it. I tell you this much, though. Who really should be getting on the hot seat right now is probably not Parker. It's probably the young guy, Kyle Anderson. He's been kind of a disappointment.
Yeah, he has been. Are you taking that seriously?
A little bit. I had some high hopes for him heading into the season. I thought he'd be having a coming out party this season. Yeah, look at what he's doing so far. He's kind of fell flat a little bit. He had his moments. I get it. I know where I'm going. It's the summer league, but hey, he was looking good in the summer league. He was looking good in preseason. Everything looked, all the stars were lining up, and then kind of fell flat, at least early on. It's still a very, very young season. But off that bench, he is averaging, at least about an assist a game, about one steal per game. He's playing about 21 minutes. He's giving you about four rebounds per game. He's averaging, 3 points off that bench? That's not good.
Yeah. Well, and wouldn't that sort of, back up the idea that maybe it's a good idea to shake up the bench a little bit? And at least, if he's not as far along in his progression as we thought he was going to be, then if anything, moving Tony Parker to the bench just makes even more sense, because Tony Parker can run an offense. I just don't think a starting caliber offense. I think we've seen success stories like Jamal Crawford on the Clippers,
right.
Like I just think that there's so many teams whose second unit is basically a farm for young talent.
Yeah.
And that generally, sophomores, 3-year players, I don't think that they can really deal with Tony Parker's veteran savvy, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
But Meanwhile, you put him, you know, toe-to-toe with, like, Chris Paul, he's going to get slaughtered on both sides.
Oh, he is. Yes, he is.
And, yeah.
You know what? But, you know, it's kind of dovetailing off what we're talking about, this whole, you know, rotation and Will Parker eventually moved to the bench and Mills inserted into the starting lineup. There's a big X factor in this, and that's one Coach Popovich. This guy is sometimes too loyal to a T. I've been covering the Spurs for quite some time, and I remember the Mike Finley days. Mike Finley was on his last legs. There was nothing left of him, but Pop refused to bench him. He would all the time insert him into situations where he should not have been in, and it would cost the Spurs a game or here and there during the time when Finley was gone. Now, that was then. This is now. Parker's been there, has done that. He's loyal to these guys. It's going to take a lot for him to go to Parker and say, you got to come off the bench. Will Pop do that? Yeah, I think he will if it comes push to shove. But it's really, when I look at everything, I look at Pop and I say, you know what? But will Pop do it? Will Pop, you know, he can be stubborn. He can be very stubborn at times. That's been his biggest flaw as a coach. People don't really talk about it, but I think he can be stubborn. If Parker's the starting point guard, then Parker's going to be the starting point guard. You can throw all the type of analytic numbers at him. He ain't going to budge. He's going to be, nope, Parker's my guy.
Yeah, yeah. And I don't live or die by analytics. And clearly there's more going on than just pure X's and O's and matchups and analytics. There's more than that in the backgrounds in San Antonio. So, I mean... Who am I to say that Popovich is wrong?
Well, you're Chris. You're Chris Axman. That's who you are.
Yeah. Check out almightyballer.com, everyone. But, you know, I guess my response to that is I think that it's going to be a little bit like there's going to be a like a Romo and Dax Prescott type thing where I think that Patty Mills is going to demonstrate how much so he should have the starting point guard job.
Well, if you look at what happened in that Clippers loss, he got eaten alive by Chris Paul. But that's Chris Paul, though.
Right. I mean, what if it was Tony Parker?
My God. Yeah, it would have been worse.
Yeah. I just think that Patty Mills, too, outside shooting is a problem a bit. I mean, not outside shooting, three-point shooting is a bit of a problem in the starting lineup. Whereas I don't think that the success or failure of bench units are nearly as dictated by having really quality outside shooting, partially because most bench units have a defensive philosophy to just close out on shooters, whether or not they're actually good, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I don't know. I think that it's – I would almost not be that surprised if Tony Parker – because Tony Parker's, I mean, he's talked behind the scenes a decent amount about, like, you know, my knees hurt, like, you know, my feet hurt, like, I am.
Well, I got nobody else to blame for that than Parker himself, because this guy, before he hit his, decline, he just would not take a summer off. He had to play in France almost every freaking summer. Whatever tournament Team France was at, he had to go. And even played for his team that he owns out in France that has nothing to do with the international game. He would just suit up and play during the summer instead of resting. I really believe that had a big factor into the dramatic decline that we saw. I mean, it almost happened overnight. And you really think about it, is he really that old? He's not that old.
Like 35?
I think he's like 32. I'm probably wrong about that, but I don't think he's on the opposite end of 35. But I think he's in his early 30s. I'm pretty sure about that. But you see the constant playing in France, the constant not taking some time off just to rest and heal up. You question. Maybe there's sometimes I even question his work ethic during the summer, staying in shape. He'll come into shape a little plump. There's a there's a kind of a joke among Spurs fans. I've heard him called, they refer to him as Tony Porker sometimes because he comes in a little hefty sometimes, but he's not that old. He's the youngest of the old big three. So
he's, I just looked it up. He's 34.
He's 34. Yeah.
Yeah. And,
but then you factor in the position he plays. That's a lot of wear and tear.
Yeah, and yeah. The style he plays, you know, mm-hmm. he's always been, you know, beeline to the basket type of guy, and you know, get amongst the trees.
But you know what? There is a happy middle, though. There is a happy middle with the whole argument Parker starting or him coming off the bench and Mills starting and vice versa. He's Pop will probably pull this. Parker, I know you're healthy, but you're resting. You're going to take the next couple of games off, you know, and I think that's going to be the happy middle. He's Pop will sit Parker, even if he's fine. You just give him a DNP for a couple of games and you'll see Laprovittola and Mills pretty much handling the ball. Maybe if Murray, but I don't see that happen, but you'll definitely see that kind of strategy as the season progresses with Pop.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess, you know, Part of the reason I like this is not that I'm looking to relegate Tony Parker per se. You know, I mean, part of what I like about this whole outcome and the transition of Tony Parker into a bench role is that I think he would be so good at it. You know, mm-hmm. I think that it would suit his level of play right now, and it would amplify his strong suits and. You know, it wouldn't be some of his shortcomings wouldn't be as glaring as I think they are at this point. But there are really like a lot of things at play that make it interesting. And part of it is, yeah, I think Patty Mills is a real offensive punch off the bench. But, you know, I mean, he's an offensive punch as a starter, too.
Exactly.
Yeah, I think that there's a good fit there for sure. Well, so before I let you go, I'm always interested in what the Spurs have going on in the periphery in terms of, you know, who are the guys like Jonathan Simmons who, I mean, I knew his name a couple of years ago, but, you know, sane people shouldn't have known his name a couple of years ago. So who are the guys? It seems like they have a lot of new European talent. Who are the guys that the world should be expecting to see 30 minutes from down the line who – just better than people realize.
Now, I'll give you a little golden nugget right here on your show, Chris. I talked to an NBA agent recently, and you know, I'm pretty sure you know them. They gotta remain anonymous. They really cannot say, you know, their name or whatnot because they know a lot of proprietary information about teams.
Sure.
But this agent was telling me that regarding Simmons, that is, the agent was pretty much saying, there is no way this guy just, quote unquote, surprisingly came out of nowhere. The agent opined that the Spurs knew about this guy. And they hid him away from teams. And the agent was telling me a lot of other stuff about how the Spurs work when it comes to drafting players and finding hidden talent, whether it be overseas, the D-League, or whatnot. So this agent did not buy the whole, oh, he came out of nowhere. The Spurs did it again. They took a chance on this guy who paid $150 to try out with the Austin Spurs. The agent is calling BS on that. So
yeah, like frankly, yeah. I'm surprised that people don't realize.
Yeah.
I'm surprised that people don't remember him. It's not like he wasn't playing minutes last year. You know,
exactly.
He even saw some time, I think, in the playoffs. So
exactly.
I'm a little bit confused. I mean, part of it is that so many people were watching him on a national stage in that first game against the Warriors, and those people, you know, weren't really watching bench minutes for the Spurs for the most part.
But to answer your question though about a player that fans should keep an eye on, I'm pretty sure you know who I'm going to go with. I got to go with Davis Bertans.
Oh, I thought you were going to say Dwayne Dedmon.
No, actually, I'm going to dig deeper than that. Dedmon, I think, slowly is coming around, but I'm going to go a little deeper and go with Bertans.
So where's the upside there? What's your expectation?
The upside is this. He came into the league with the reputation of just being a gunner, just being a stretch four guy. Put him out there in the three-point line, he'll nail it. He's proven to be more than that in the short time that he's gotten minutes on the court. In Popovich's system, where he puts a leash on players, he's already been giving him a little bit more minutes off that bench. He's becoming a little bit more part of the rotation. Is he still that long shooting Latvian? Yes, he can knock it down. If you listen to the games, if you have a league pass, whether it be the home or the away feed, every time he comes in, either team's announcers are like, who is this kid? Who is this guy? He's 6 foot 11.
I've noticed that.
Yeah, deceptively athletic. He is not afraid to mix it up in the paint and go hard at somebody if they're trying to drive the lane and he goes up for the block. He can finish at the rim with authority. He can pass with the best of them. I'll give you you should have some fun with this. You should YouTube Davis Bertans' game-winning shots. And when he was playing overseas in the EuroLeague at the top level, this kid was not afraid. He would do the stare down, hit the shot, and look at the camera like, what? You know, like, I just did that. Yeah. Yeah, and Dedmon is another one, too. Yes, I'm not going to sit here and say, like, no, not Dedmon. No, Dedmon's going to be a big surprise, too, defensively for the Spurs. But if you want to dig a little deeper in that bench, I'm going to give you Bertans. Yeah, maybe in the past couple of the games, he's kind of hit a rookie wall light. But he will come around. He's a non-traditional rookie, as I mentioned. He played in the EuroLeague. He started playing when he's a teenager. And he was playing against men, double his age. And he proved it. By the way, he plays with nine fingers. He has a finger that was chopped off when he was a kid. And he still can stroke that three like no problem. But I think consider this a bonus. And yes, I would also toss in Dwayne Dedmon. Dedmon, defensively, he's only going to improve. I would not be surprised to see if Dedmon gets a little bit more minutes on the court just simply for what he can do and be that rim protector that the Spurs lost with Tim Duncan. Obviously, you're not going to replace Tim Duncan. Nobody ever will. But Dedmon has been a surprising gem for the Spurs. It's funny. I did a recent show with Locked On Rockets, and Ben DuBose, and our mutual friend, he will say that the Rockets were gunning for him too. They wanted him on that squad, and they wanted him. I think he pretty much said like before they wanted Nene. So that should tell you a lot.
Oh, Dwayne Dedmon was supposed to be the answer for the Warriors.
Oh like, my God! Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
The Warriors shit their pants after they heard Dwayne Dedmon was going to the Spurs. It's like when people were talking about part of the reason why the Kevin Durant grab from the Warriors was so good was, you know, yeah, like he's amazing, but it also neutralizes OKC. Like, God, the Warriors would be so much better with Dwayne Dedmon right now. So yeah, I think it was a major steal. And I mean, he's just another in like a long line, a glorious legacy of Magic young guys who it just like was blatantly obvious if you like looked at the stats and watched the game that, wow, like when this Dwayne Dedmon kid is starting, our defense is top five. Let's let him walk.
But imagine this, man. You got Dedmon in the paint and you got Kawhi out in the perimeter. My goodness.
Yeah, no, it's awesome. It makes a lot of sense. And then, you know, honestly, I think that the injection of youthful energy, how long do you think D'Angelo Murray is going to take? Because it's nice to have another legitimate pick and roll threat. I think that that's going to be D'Angelo Murray's best outcome.
You're talking about DeJounte Murray, right?
Oh, yeah. I was saying D'Angelo. Yeah, DeJounte Murray.
Yeah. You know what? He's still raw. He's been sent to the D League already. That the Austin Spurs, not for any extended period of time, not to, you know, play a full week of D League games, but simply just to keep his rhythm going, get him some reps, have him learn the system. Personally, I think he should stay there.
No, me too. He doesn't look ready.
Yeah, not a knock on him. I'm not saying that he's not NBA material. He is. I would rather see him get playing time versus sitting deep in that bench and only hoping to get playing time and doing what he can do in a practice where he's not going up against NBA competition other than his own teammates. But personally, I've been of the opinion, and I actually did a show on it on Locked On Spurs, that he needs to stay there. And I spoke to him when he got drafted, when I brought it up to him out in Brooklyn, where the draft was held this past summer. And I said, yeah, hey, you ever thought about, you know, if the D-League presents itself, are you okay with that? He's like, fine, I'm fine with it. And I think the Spurs will do him a favor, as well as the Spurs doing themselves a favor if they send him to the D-League.
Yeah, no, I see, it's interesting. I was talking to Mark Folliwell, the TV guy for the Mavs, and he was talking about this year how, since the Mavericks have a similar situation where there's a new injection of some young talent, where this season would be a good time to sort of throw the young guys out there and see if they produce and sink or swim. And I made the point that when you have teams like the Mavericks or the Spurs, and of course the Spurs are better at this because the Spurs, you know, I'm from Dallas, but like, you know, the Spurs are the Spurs and the Mavs are the Mavs. Like, let's be realistic here. even though it hurts. But anyways, they're in similar situations right now where in a lot of ways it's the end of an era. And I made the point to Mark that the sink or swim strategy doesn't work because of that corporate knowledge that you were talking about. And I mean, specifically, it doesn't work for the for a team like the Spurs and a team like the Mavs. I think we can probably agree that the two best coaches in the league are in Texas.
Right.
And like, so there's an established system. There's that corporate knowledge that you were talking about.
And you're talking about D'Antoni, right?
Dude, what are you all right, this podcast's over. All right. yeah, but I was making the point that, you know, if you introduce enough young guys who don't know the system and haven't been fully acclimated, then there's a tipping point at which, like, free radicals break the system, right? You know, there's a point at which if you start playing a new guy who hasn't been inculcated into the Spurs way of playing, then that weakest link makes the whole house of cards collapse. Do you get what I mean?
I get you. Yep.
So what you tend to see with a system like the Spurs is, like Kawhi Leonard, Kawhi played 8 minutes his rookie year, and then, you know, 16, and then like 25, and then 30, you know, like it was an incremental growth in time as he got used to it. And it wasn't for lack of talent and lack of natural gifts, athletic or otherwise. It was because he wasn't quite a Spurs yet. He hadn't been fully basted. And I would expect a similar situation to unfold with DeJounte.
Yeah, DeJounte. Yeah, I think, is he a piece of the Spurs' future? So long as maybe no other NBA team kind of like tosses them a nice trade and he might be involved. Yeah, and he's going to be a nice upgrade at that point guard position. He's a tall guard. You know, he's a slasher. He needs to work on his shot. He's real thin. I used to met him in person at the draft, and I felt like I'd just like blow on him. He just float away. But over the summer, the Spurs were beefing him up as best they could, but they see a lot in him. They want to keep him around, especially when we're talking about Parker's quick decline. He's going to be a part of that future for the Spurs. We mentioned Bertans, Deadman, Kawhi, LaMarcus. So the Spurs' future is intact. Now it's just a matter of them coming together.
Yeah, no, I like what the Spurs have built going down the line. And they've done a good job of becoming sort of insta contenders. Like they have a whole lot of players who are in their prime, a lot more than you would think, or at least still in their operative, you know, contending states. Like, I think Pau Gasol has more left than people think, partially because, you know, the Chicago Bulls training staff is garbage and they were still able to get something out of him. So,
yeah.
I like the Spurs team. I picked them to, you know, I think that they're going to be just as good as their 67-win team. Probably not reach 67, you know, because there's a degree of variance with all this stuff. But, I mean, I fully expect them to be above 60, you know, barring injury. And Danny Green needs to come back. That's huge. Oh, and by the way, you were talking about the future of the Spurs point guard position. I have a strong feeling that Chris Paul is going to be wearing black and gray next year.
I sure hope you're right. I would love to see that happen.
Doesn't that just make a lot of sense, you know?
It really does. It, you know, depending I mean, I don't know. I mean, will Ballmer throw the bank at him? You know, I mean, the Spurs are not going to have Ballmer money. That's for sure.
I bet they could clear up maybe max space.
They could probably clear up something. But I mean, oh my God, can you imagine Kawhi Leonard, Chris Paul, LaMarcus Aldridge, and Pau Gasol if he re-ups?
Yeah.
That'd be devastating. That'd be really, really, really interesting. And I'm pretty sure the rest of the NBA would just kind of like throw their hands up in the air, and fans and medias would be, they did it again. This team just won't die.
Yeah. You know, I have a feeling, you know, I'm not going to go on record saying it's definitely going to happen, but I think that, you know, it's one of those sneak possibilities that people don't quite realize. Well, hey, Jeff, I got
to
go.
Before we recorded, listeners, I was really you really need to go to almightyballing.com. Seriously, go out there. This Chris is my goodness. You just look at the artwork. That's all I'm going to say. Just go out there and look at it and be prepared to be amazed.
Well, hey, listen to the podcasts.
And that too. Yes, obviously. That's a big one. Click that big old triangle and press play. But but soak in the artwork that is Chris Axman.
Yeah, I really appreciate that, man. And, you know, also as we were talking about before we recorded, Jeff is the host of Locked On Spurs, and he's killing it over there. I was telling him I think he's probably top five out of – do you guys over at Locked On, do you have all 30 NBA teams? I think
we're short.
You do now. One.
I think we know. Yeah, I think we are because we picked up the Washington.
I thought the Wizards and the Mavericks were the last ones. And
exactly.
Now
you read my mind. Now they're full. Yeah. The Wizards were the last team to get full, and now they've been filled. So those two teams are good to go.
Yeah. So, you know, Locked On, the whole Locked On network is great. And, you know, David Locke. Another one of those genius guys. David Locke should be president of the United States. That's a thing.
Are you going to write him in?
Yeah. Oh, God, it's too late for that. But I can see David Locke maybe being vice president for Kanye next year. We'll see what happens. But, you know, regardless of what happens, definitely go check out Locked On Spurs and listen to my man Jeff. And Jeff, you do too many things in San Antonio. Run through that dossier. Run through those, you know, all the stuff that makes you credible as a journalist and a broadcaster. So,
thank you very much. Yes, again, you can read all my full coverage about the silver and black San Antonio Spurs on News4SanAntonio.com, Fox29SanAntonio.com. As Chris mentioned, there is the Locked On Spurs podcast that gives you a daily report on the guys in the Alamo City. And yeah, go check it out. If you want to interact with me, feel free to email me at jeffgarcia74@gmail.com. Love to hear what you got to say about the Spurs or the NBA.
Awesome. Yeah, no, thanks a lot for coming on, and I'll talk to you soon, I'm sure.
Yep, anytime, Chris. Just email me, and I'll pop on.
Great.